This is Mary Bishop, and this is October 12th, 2006 at the Gainsborough Library, and we're talking with George Rogers. Mr. Rogers, first tell me your full name.
George Edward Rogers.
And where and when were you born?
I was born at 604 First Street Northeast, May the 15th, 1919.
And how long did that was? So, how long did you live in Northeast, or how long have you lived in Roanoke all your life?
I lived in Roanoke all my life, with the exception of about 2 years that I spent in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. And what streets have you lived on in Roanoke?
I've lived on one, two, three, four different streets.
What are they?
I lived at where I was born, 604 4th Street Northeast, and then I lived, when I got married, I moved to 927 Fairfax Avenue, oh. Northwest, and that was my first wife, and then when I got married again, we lived at 1610 Gilmer Avenue,
mm-hmm.
Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm living at 1311 Orange Avenue, Northwest.
How long have you lived there?
I guess I've been there for 25 years, I guess, pretty close to it. I moved there when my wife and I divorced, and then when my when my mother died, I had to buy the house from the rest of the children.
Mm-hmm.
I did that and did some repairs there, so I'm still there, mm-hmm. by myself.
Tell me about your parents and your brothers and sisters.
Well, my mother and father moved to Roanoke, I guess, 80-some years ago. Well, I'm 87, so I was the first child born in Roanoke.
Uh-huh.
My oldest brother.
Where did they move from?
North Carolina. Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
My mother went to Kittrell College. I don't think that she lived in Kittrell. I think my dad lived at Henderson. And I think they got married down there, wherever. And when they moved to Roanoke, they had two children. My oldest brother was Charles Sumner Rogers, and my oldest sister was Ruth Marie Rogers. And there's another question you asked me. You want me to go on from there?
Sure.
Okay. But I was born here 87 years ago at 601 4th Street. And then we moved from there to Patton Avenue. My father was a brick mason.
Uh-huh.
And as the family grew, we had to get another place. So we moved from 604 4th Street to 110 Patton Avenue Northwest, where my dad had built a brick house. And then we began to filter out from there, you know, and I lived down there. I don't remember. I don't remember really what year it was when they decided to do away with Northeast. Everybody had to move out of Northeast area, and then they had to find other places to live, and then most of them started moving to Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
And
so that's when your father built the house on Patton?
That was before this was after he built the house down there, because the rest of the children were all born in the new house.
Oh, okay.
After me,
mm-hmm.
See, because I was the first one born at 6 in Roanoke, and then the other three children were born in Roanoke too, but they were born at, I think they were born on Patton Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were sort of outgrowing the house on 4th Street. And so, Dad being a brick mason, he built this house for us on Patton Avenue.
Describe that house for us. Is it still there?
Oh, no, 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 no. You see, when they did away with all the the properties in Northeast for the blacks down there, we had to have a place to live too, so we had to move. And what was the question you asked me?
If the house was still there.
No. It's been gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, ever since then.
Now that I think about the address, I realize there are no houses in that spot.
Oh, no. The Civic Center's down there now.
Mm-hmm.
I could just throw a rock from the Civic Center and hit the house we lived in.
Mm-hmm.
Just about. Is that close?
Talk about a little bit about, so your father was a brick mason.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about the work you've done in your life.
Well, when I was in high school, I was shining shoes downtown on Jefferson Street in a place that they did, worked on shoes,
mm-hmm.
and they blocked hats. You know what that means?
Mm-mm.
Well...
Oh, blocked hats. Yes,
yeah.
Yes, I do remember that.
See, during those years, they had several of those places that they... See, most men wore hats then. Not too many of them do now, but they did then. And they had these places so that they could... When a hat got dirty, you take it to them and they clean it up. And you come back and pick it up and they got it ready. So they had a shoe shine stand there, you know, about four seats upon it. And as you shine a person's shoes, then you go back to the end of the line, see, because there's a couple other guys in there, see. And then you, when they got somebody else, they move back to the end of the line, just move it way up.
Mm-hmm. Until
that just went on and on, and I did that until, I guess... Long before I left high school was when I left the place down there because...
And that was downtown?
That was downtown. Mm-hmm. You remember Oak Hall? You're not a Roanoker.
No.
Oh, okay. Oak Hall was a huge clothing store down there for men and the whole family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Big store down there. And I remember if you were going to buy a pair of shoes, I did. Right next door to where I was shining shoes was a place called Tom McCann.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go, and when I got ready to leave work that day, if I had made $2, I'd take a dollar one and put on a pair of shoes. I did this until I got the shoes paid for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And but then, I don't remember actually what happened after that, but the only major job that I had after that was, I went to Hotel Roanoke, and I was a bellman over there for about a little less than a year. And I heard that they were hiring on the railroad. Mm-hmm. So I went downtown in the dining car department where they were hiring and tried to apply for a job. They said, well, George, you know that the railroad owns Hotel Roanoke. I said, yes, I'm aware of that. He said, well, you'd have to get a release from Hotel Roanoke before we can consider you. I said, okay. So I knew I had to get before the superintendent of the service to get permission to go down there to apply. But he was such an evil person, you know. He looked like he was just so full of himself or whatever, you know. But he was just a mean man. And I bet you I passed by his door 8 or 10 times before I got up nerve enough to go in there just to say, tell him what I wanted. So when I finally got up enough word, I went in and I said, Mr. Coleman, I said, I need a favor. And I said, I want to go down on the railroad. And they told me I'd have to come up here to get permission from you all before I could be considered for employment. And so I said, what do you think? He said, well, George, I think it's a good idea. He said, if you want to go down there, he said, you go on down there and see what you can do. If they don't hire you, come on back, you got your job waiting on you.
How old were you, do you think?
I'm saying I was about, I'm just making a guess now, somewhere around 2021. Mm-hmm. And so I went on down there and started to work. And the main line was from Norfolk to Cincinnati. And that was the main line, but we had dining cars running from Roanoke to Bristol, Virginia. I mean, going to Birmingham, Alabama. Mm-hmm. There were other dining cars making several dining trains going from Roanoke to Cincinnati and back to Norfolk on the main line. But that was the Southern Railroad going to Birmingham. The train leaving New York tonight, destination Birmingham, would leave there about 7 o'clock that night, pick us up here the next morning. Mm-hmm. Because when the train came in, you had the Pullmans on the rear end, coaches on the front. They just split the train, stick us in there, and we served breakfast, lunch, and dinner into Birmingham. Mm-hmm. And then the train leaving New Orleans, destination New York, leaving at night, and they would come in and pick us up in Birmingham. We served breakfast, lunch, and dinner into Roanoke. Mm-hmm. Said we did this on Monday and Tuesday, a day going down, a day coming back. And then we were off Wednesday and Thursday. And then on Friday, we had to go down to the commissary down here and put supplies on the car that the steward had ordered, mm-hmm. because he knew what we needed for make the next trip. And they would put these supplies on the car, and then we would take off the next day. That would be on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So then that we stayed there until I guess maybe I forget now how many years we did that, but I do remember that there were a lot of troop trains then. It was during the war, you know, and I remember when we were coming out of Norfolk one day, and by the time we got to Petersburg, somebody was coming down the platform, they like, hey, they just bombed Pearl Harbor. Mm. I said, whew. Well, sure, I'm glad we got out of Norfolk in time, you know. I had no idea what Pearl Harbor was. Never even heard of the place before. But I just assumed we're leaving a harbor down there as big as Norfolk. Gotta be somewhere near there. And I just had to get out of there, you know. So, we got back home, you know, come to find out the place 5,000 miles from here. But anyway,
before you go on, now, what was your job on the dining
car? I was a waiter.
Uh-huh.
Right. That's a good question. And
it sounds like you all worked as a team, though, and you went on Saturdays to the commissary. Did you help go get those things? Get
the food? Well, that's what we did. Like I said, we go to Birmingham, mm-hmm. and come back. Leave on Monday, come back on Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. We'd lay over Wednesday and Thursday. Then Friday, we would go down and put supplies on the train, and we'd leave on Saturday. Now, this was not a thing that you did the same days every week. You see, it would depend on whatever day that you was your turn to go back. It wouldn't necessarily be on a Saturday again, see? It'd be another day during the week, uh-huh. see? And so we did that until... put that question to me again now.
Did you work as a team, the dining car crew?
Well, in the dining car, we had five stations, mm-hmm. a deuce and a foretop. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And there were five waiters on there and four cooks. See? And you can imagine how much space you had on, how much space, especially in the kitchen.
Yeah.
With four cooks back there, and you got a stove back there, and you got refrigerators and all this kind of stuff. It was kind of tight back in there, you mm-hmm. see. And, of course, we all had different things to do. You had what you call a linen man. He had to take care of the linen. He'd go upstairs in the linen room upstairs, he would get the tablecloth and the napkins and things like that, whatever linen you would need for that car. And then the other fellas said, you wouldn't need four or five waiters in there to put supplies on the car. So we would just put whatever we, whatever personnel you needed to put the supplies on the car. They took care of it. See? Mm-hmm. But on the trip itself, when we left here, like in the mornings, after they put us on there, you didn't ever go to the back of the car because the porter back there, you'd go up front and he'd make a call. So you'd go over and say, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The dining car is now open for breakfast, the dining car to the rear. See? And so then you'd go on back so that you'd be back there by the time people start coming in. And that's just the way it was for each meal. See? You go and make an announcement that lunch was ready and then dinner was ready, et cetera, et cetera, until you get to your, you finish that day and then you do the same thing coming back the following day.
How long did you work on the dining car?
Well, I'll tell you about that. When the it got to the point where they were only hauling more employees than anybody else. And they were paying, some of them were riding free on passes, and some were riding half fare or whatever, you know. And then we, the dining car stewards we had, I don't know if I mentioned that or not, but they took them off about 2 years before they closed down the dining car business. And what happened was they, just like I said, they were, they weren't making any revenue hauling employees. Mm-hmm. There's no big cities between Norfolk and Cincinnati that you could be drawing from to get a lot of the business on there. And so they just decided to, well, they did away with the stewards. And then I became a waiter in charge. I was doing the same thing the stewards were doing, see, because they were white and we were black. But they, we, other than that, we would not have been paid promotable. See? But anyway, we did that. And after I was cut off, after they stopped the dining car business, well, they didn't need us anymore, so we could have stayed there.
But when was that?
I'm thinking somewhere. It's just a guess now. I'm talking about something like in the mid-70s or early, no, mid-70s maybe, because I remember I was still on the railroad in 41. And I don't know, I'd say somewhere maybe in the 30s. It had to be in the 30s. See, because if I was on the railroad December 7, 1941, when Pearl Harbor was, I had probably been there maybe a couple of years then. Mm-hmm. See, so it was back in the 30s.
Oh, so you probably started in the late 30s.
Yeah.
And then went on to the mid 70s.
Right.
Wow, it's a lot of years.
So then what happened? I had, did I get to where I had left the railroad?
No.
Okay. So I was a waiter in charge for about 2 years until they decided to go out of the business altogether. So as I aforementioned that, we could have stayed with the railroad, but you had to go up to the general office and work for some of the bosses up there. And you had to be cleaning up these cuspidors we talked about a few minutes ago. And then you'd have to go out to their homes and cut their grass and wash their cars and all this kind of stuff. You know, I don't want that. So I decided to try for the post office. And so I went and took an examination for the post office, passed that. And a couple of weeks went by, and I went down and talked to the postmaster. I said, Mr. Riggs, I said, I got to have a job. I said, well, Mr. Rogers said, we just don't have place for you right now. He said, we've got people ahead of you. He said, but as soon as we get down to your name, you will be hired. You'll have a job. I said, what about moving my eligibility to Washington, D.C.? He said, okay. And why had I mentioned that? And so would you believe in 3 weeks' time, they called me to come to work in Washington. So I went to Washington, and was staying my sister up there, and she was working in the Navy Department, and she was living alone, so I stayed with her, but I'm traveling back and forth every weekend, commuting, coming back home, because I had a wife and two children here, see. So then moved them up there, and then my shift was at the post office. I was carrying special deliveries. At that time, they were using station wagons for special deliveries. I wasn't doing work like the carriers do here, you know. And so I had to work from 4 to 12:30 midnight delivering special deliveries. So I had to have another job, so I got a job down at the Capitol on the House side. You familiar with the Capitol?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Serving lunch. Okay, we served lunch from about 11 to 2:30, something like that. And you wouldn't believe how these conks got along with each other. It was just like...
Really?
They'd be hollering and screaming and cursing each other all across the dining room. See, there were no ladies in there, see.
Uh-huh.
And then you bring him a regular order of something that he ordered, you know. It was never enough, even down to the desserts. What do you bring me this little bit of piece of pie here for? Regular piece of pie, you know. I want a bigger piece of watermelon than that. You had to give them what they asked for.
Uh-huh.
And the meal would cost them less than $2.
Do you remember
any...
They
get all kind of breaks up there.
You remember any well-known ones that you saw?
No. That time I had paid that much attention to who was running the country or whatever, you know. But I would leave the Capitol, the relations, I mean, geographically now, the Capitol, if you know, for me, where the Capitol is in relation to the post office, which is right next to Union Station, I could just walk from the Capitol over there.
Right.
Because the car was already over there. And then it got to the point where I had to have another job. I got a job working at a place over on Rhode Island Avenue. And it was a hotel, something very similar to the Holiday Inn, you know, serving breakfast. Now that's breakfast and lunch in the post office in one day. So I did that until I just got tired of that. And I told my wife one day, I said, listen, we're going to have to move back home. I said, because we can't afford to stay up here. So she didn't want to leave, but she'd never been to a big city before, you know. Sure, she just enjoyed it up there so much. Never seen all these big businesses and all this kind of stuff, you know. She said, I don't want to leave. I said, well, I tell you what, I'm going to give you 30 days. We're getting out of here. So I know in about 2 weeks' time, she's getting boxes and stuff together, you know, to move back to Roanoke. And so then we moved back to Roanoke, and I got back into the post office here. And then, you know, out of the post office, when you first go in, you jump from this station, that station, whatever, as a carrier, see. And that's what I did until I retired. And I retired from the post office in 1984. And I retired in September. And about the first week in September. But the third week, I got sick of it, being retired. I said, shoot, I got to find something to do.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, how long have you been in Roanoke?
I've been 18 years from
Oh, well, you familiar with when the Marriott Hotel was out there?
Mm-hmm.
You? Oh, okay. Well, where the, you know where the Wyndham is? That was built as a Marriott Hotel. The man that built that hotel was a local person. He lived in Salem, and he was an architect. He designed it and had it built. And I knew that, because I retired in September, and they opened the hotel in November. So what I had to do, I had to go over there and see about getting a job over there, you see, because I was a waiter before, and, and I felt like I'd be doing something in that hotel as a waiter or whatever. And so I went over to the hotel. They were just about through with the hotel, and I went in personnel and talked to the lady. I said, "What do you think my chances are?" She said, "I think your chances are very good." I said, "Okay." We'll make a long story short. I got the job. And I was the first employee of the year that the hotel had. And there were a lot of employees there then, you know. But I've always been a dedicated person as far as the job is concerned. I did as good a job as I could while I was working there, you know. And I'm still there.
Oh, really?
I'm only working two nights a week, though. Mondays and Tuesdays.
And what do you do?
I'm a host now in the gourmet restaurant at the Wyndham in Remington. Did you ever hear of it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm the host of Monday and Tuesday nights.
Oh, okay.
That's all I want to work.
Uh-huh.
Because I've got other things to do. I belong to this and that and volunteer here and there. And belong to Loudon Melrose Neighborhood Organization, which is, they do things in the communities, you know. Mm-hmm. In certain areas, they got several of them in Roanoke, but I just happen to belong to LMNO, which is Loudon Melrose Neighborhood Organization. And then I volunteer with Ram House every Wednesday, and I've been down there for about 15 years.
Wow.
I started, I was in the kitchen. I enjoyed it, you know, because I knew what we had to do. I got around to doing all the little things you needed to do to get food ready for the homeless people, see? So I've been doing this about 12 years, and they hired this girl. She is the kitchen manager. Something happened to the other person, there's a van. And so they finally got this lady to come in. And of course, we worked together for a pretty good while, several years. And so they had this dining room over there seated 32 people, four tables of eight. And before you opened the dining room, you had a meal sitting on all 32 spots. So once you opened the door, it would fill up. Okay? Then the guy with the clicker, he started 32 on there. Okay, if two or three people finished, they got up and left. Two or three people would come in. And then they were, see, they've changed it now, where, you know, they got a buffet, the people come through and help themselves. But then you had to serve them. So you serve them, and then when you set the meal down, you had to come back and get the desserts for them. See, and you come back, and when somebody else came in, you carried them a plate, and then I have a tray for the desserts you carried them. But see, I noticed some of them look like they were not going back out there to carry the desserts on time. It looked like they'd be sitting there. But they got all volunteers in there, you know. They weren't professional.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, "Wait a minute, have y'all carried any desserts out to those three people that just came in?" Here comes the manager. Restaurant manager. "I have told them everything they need to know. They don't need any additional information from you." I said, "This is what I'm realizing. I'm a volunteer down here. And she's telling me like she's paying me a salary every month." Mm-hmm. But they've been trying to get me to come upstairs to the office anyway, you know. And I just enjoyed doing what I was doing. But this gave me an opportunity to go upstairs with these people upstairs. I went up there. There's three girls working up there now, the director and two other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm up there on Wednesdays, and I just enjoy going over there so much. When I go in, I'm always putting on some nice cologne before I leave home, because they just want to hug you, you know. "Oh, sure," I said, you smell so good, and you're rubbing my back, you know. Have coffee made for me when I get there. Always peanut butter and crackers back there, and sometimes he brings stuff from home, you know. And I just enjoy the job so much.
I like doing
that better than anything that I've done, because the girls are so nice to me, and they cater to me, and I do things for them as well, you know. But I enjoy what I do over there.
And what do you do?
Well, downstairs they have a a lady down there that has this office that you come in. They will give you money to pay electric bills, mm-hmm. rent, water bills, all of your utilities. They'll give you bus passes. They will give you money to, if you need some kind of a thing that you get from school, if you want, if somebody you're going to or whatever, that you have to give me some information about where you went to school or whatever. And they do all these different things for them. See, okay. Sometimes three or four sheets will come up for each person, sometimes five or six sheets, you know. Depends on how much stuff they have asked for and the information they have to get. And but when these forms come upstairs to me, then I have to look in the file to see whether or not they've been there within a year. You're only entitled to come there once a year, uh-huh. see. I have to go through and find out if they've been there before in the same year. It depends on what it is. Now, if you just get some, it only costs maybe $20, $25, no problem. So sometimes these little things they're asking for from the city or from the schools, maybe $10 or $15, then you're entitled to whatever else you want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now, they will, when these forms come up, I look through the file and see if they've been, so they, if they haven't, then I have to fill out this form, finish filling it out. And there's another sheet that I have to put down. What all the names on there, what area in the city they're from, what they wanted, like rent and electric bills or whatever, what they've asked for, and the amount over here, see. Then I have to fill out this form that came up from downstairs, because sometimes it's three or four sheets in there, but I do very little work with that, but I have to write checks for Appalachian. I have to write checks for them. I have to write checks for rent, and write checks for these other little incidentals that came from the city, of sometimes only $2. These people come down and ask for something, even $2 they can't, they don't have the money for it. But anyway, that's what I do upstairs. And once I get those forms filled out and the checks written, then I have to write, address the envelopes going to wherever is this place, Halls Association, you know, rent, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I have to write the checks and I don't sign them, but I just write them.
Mm-hmm.
And
excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Tell me about your school life.
Well,
early on and whenever.
Well, I remember one day coming to school. There's a fellow that lived right across the street over here. There's a side street coming up. The school faces that way. The side street over here, another street over here. And I was on my way to school. He goes, "Hey, come here a minute. Is that what you want?" He said, "I got something I'm going to sell you." I said, what is it? "I got a gun I want to sell you. How much you want for it?" He said, $2. I looked at it and I said, "Well, I guess pretty good deal." So I gave him $2 for the gun and put it in my pocket. So when I went in school, I saw one of my buddies in there, you know, and I said, "Man, look at what I got for $2. "Yeah. All right, I'll bet you it wasn't an hour passed before they called me to come to the office. This monkey ratted on me. See. So when I went down to the principal's office, he said, "George, I want you to what you've got in your right pants pocket, I want you to put it on my desk." I said, "I can't do that." Because I said, "Mr., how did he know that I had a pistol in my pocket?" He said, "Well, I'm going to tell you, now you're going to have to put it up there, or else you're going to have to be suspended from school." I said, "Well, I tell you what, I'll do that if you give me the $2 that I paid for it on my way to school. I'm not going to do that either." I said, "All right, then you do what you have to do." See? So he told me I was going to have to go home. I said, "Okay," so I went on home.
How old were you?
I guess I was about 16. 16, 17. 17, I'm sure.
And what school was that?
Lucy Addison. So I just stayed out of school. And but what happened was my mama and daddy had to come over to the school and talk to the principal to get me back in school. So one night they had a basketball game. So I went to the basketball game. They charged me not a student price, a regular adult price. So what's going on here? You know? I said, I'm a student over here. You're not in school now. I said, okay. So it was just how crazy this is now. I came on back outside and I saw two or three guys back there. I said, man, so we gonna break in the back town. On the back they had these a chain that went through these two handles. You know, you have handle on this door, handle on this door. Chain that run through there. Mm-hmm. They got something in pride, that thing, a chain off of there. And we started in. Well, just about that time, somebody, here comes the principal. The other guys ran that way, I ran this way. I ran right into the principal's arms. I'm the only one that he saw. He knew there was somebody else back there, but he didn't know who they were because he didn't see it. But it was dark, you know, baseball game was the night. So, he said, okay, George, I saw you. I saw you, you know. So they called my mom and dad, and they had to come over and see about me. And I'm sitting up on the hill there because I'm, and some said to me, George, you better just stay here. You better go back down there while your mom and dad's down there to see what's going on. See, because if I just, mom and dad leave, and I got to be facing this man again by myself. But what they did, they carried me down to the, place down here. It was not a jail, but it was, you were behind bars, you know.
Detention center?
Detention, that's what it was. And so they had some coming up the next day for me, you know. So Daddy never did come down, and Mama did. Mama came down, and I think the fine was something like $10 or something like that. He said, you pay $10 or 10 days in jail. Well, now it's all 10 days would have put it through Christmas. And she said, Mama went on and gave me the $10. And $10 was a lot of money to them then, you know. But she said, I'm not going to let my son be in school, I mean in jail, during Christmas. Okay? So that was the end of my schooling. I decided not to go back to school. I was just a few months from finishing, see? Mm-hmm. But since that time, I'm not sorry that I didn't, because I have been fortunate enough to have decent jobs from the beginning. I bought 3 homes in my life, and one for my first wife, and one for my second wife, and the one that I'm living in now. Mm-hmm. And I've got some money saved up, and I bought a little stock here, a little stock there, whatever. I don't think I could have done it. Maybe I could have done better, but I'm satisfied with how my life has been, you know, because I have lived a life where I know just every biggie in Northwest. Mm-hmm. And you can hardly go through Northwest and say something about George Rogers, the person that know me, mm-hmm. unless they're people that I say under 50 years old. See, but people that are my age or maybe say 20 years younger, they all know me because I've been involved in so many different things from time to time, you know. I guess one of the reasons she had me down here. But I have enjoyed my life, and I have no regret for not finishing high school. Now, I made sure when my children got grown, I told all of them went to college, but one.
How many children do you have?
5.
Wow.
And so that one child decided she wanted to go in the service. And so she went in the service. And she put 10 years in. She got out. She has been one of the best children. She's the only one that I have that have never asked me for a nickel. Not one nickel. She put 10 years in the service. She started working down here at Eli Lilly, I think it was, at that time. And she's been down there for 17 years. My oldest daughter got married, and she moved to Washington. She has a son. He's 30-some years old now. It's my grandson. And then I have my other son. Yeah, he has a son, which is my grandson. And my other two children don't have any. My other two daughters don't have any children. And, but what I did, I went down and had the home put in my daughter's name. See, anything happened to me, I don't think they can take my home now because it's not in my name. It's in her name. I'm leaving her the house because she's the only child I haven't done anything for. The rest of them have been, had to hand out like this. You know, you would think that once you have children at home, that you have fed them, clothed them, given them a place to stay, and all this kind of stuff, while they're by books for them, papers and all this, that by the time they get grown, you would think they're on their own. It didn't work that way. My daughter told me the other night, my son's wife, I don't know where he ever got her from. She wanted to borrow some money for something. And, well, I let her have $2,800. Some oldest bill she said that she had. You know, would you call the damn house? 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Hello. She's still at home. I bet she's had 20 jobs the past 2 years. She just don't like to go to work. But to have a son, you think you got any money saved for him to go to college? I'm putting money in the bank for him every month. And I've got about $20,000 saved up for him to go to college when he finishes high school. That's been a little tough.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Tell me about your community life, your home life at your various houses here. What the neighborhood was like, what your home life was like.
Well, I don't remember. You tell me going all the way back or in later years.
I guess either one you feel like talking about.
Well, the only thing I remember about years back was when we lived next door to, well, there's a Catholic school up on the hill, yeah, St.
Mm-hmm.
Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right down the bottom is a creek that runs down through there. You know where it is behind the Civic Center?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Long Lick.
We live Big Lick.
Uh-huh.
No, maybe Long Lick. I don't know what it is, but the name of it is. But we lived about a half a block up from the creek. See, there was a vacant lot in our house. And the houses were along the creek itself. And we used to get out there, and we didn't get along with the boys up on the hill because they were all in an orphanage up there, you know, because they had an orphanage up there.
Oh, I didn't
know that. Oh, yeah. I mean, not St. Gerard, but
St. Andrews.
St. Andrews. And they all wore uniforms, you know, blue and white, I think it was. And they used to go out there and throw rocks at us. We throwing rocks back at them, see. How stupid it was. They throwing down the hill, and we throwing up the hill. I don't know if a rock ever got up and hit one of them. But we just kept throwing rocks. We'd hit it once in a while. Oh! We couldn't get enough rocks that far up there. Dumb kids, but, you know, we just did it. And then, let's see, there was a croquet, a vacant lot right next to us. There was, these men used to work for the railroad. They would come through there on their way home in the evening. And they had cleared that lot all off, you know, and they put a croquet set out there. And these guys would come by, and they took what they used for balls were. They made these balls out of bowling balls. Down at the railroad, they had some kind of way they could grind these old big balls down, make them about the size of a croquet ball.
Yeah.
And they just tore up the fences around it, you know, when they hit them balls. And they had made their own
mallets.
Mallets. And they had a rubber thing put on one end, a big piece of leather on the other.
Made their own.
Made your own, see? And see, they would, all the fences around, they had holes in them because them guys hit them balls and missed them. Boom! And over time, you know, your fence was all messed up. But it stayed that way, I guess, until we had to leave from down there. They had it was a big boulevard type thing, and we used a skating rink, see, because that's the only thing we had to ride on. No bicycles, mm-hmm. Couldn't afford them. We got skates and we just skated around. And we had guys in the neighborhood, you know, girls didn't skate then, and we just played baseball. You know, it was the only sport that we got into was baseball and skating and things like that. And coming up, I think that I don't remember. I remember going to the Y, and the Y was in a house, and you can imagine that house. Excuse me. It was in the neighborhood.
Was right near here back then, wasn't it?
It was right over here on Wells Avenue. You know where First Baptist Church is now? On that same street, there was a church on that corner. I don't remember the name of it. But right across the street was Dr. Patson's house. And he had a sister, I think it was his sister. She was a truant officer. It's the next thing there. And she was an old, great, big lady, you know. And she, during school hours, she would be walking the neighborhood, you know, and she'd see these kids out of school. She'd curl their buns right back to school. And that was her job. And she did a good job at it. Because when those kids see her coming, and she, you see which way they ran, you know. Because some of them, she'd just grab them when she saw them, just take them back to the school they belonged to. And then she would report them and all this, you know. But she got the job done. Now, I think she probably did a much better job then than they're doing now, see. Because the schools are so diversified now that you'd have to have, I don't know how many people to have in the city to do the same job that she was doing in Northwest, put it this way. She was handling schools that we had in Northwest. Mm-hmm. What they did in the other parts of the city, we had no idea.
One of the questions here I think is very good is, did your family have stories about memories during the Civil War or about slavery?
Never heard anything about it.
Mm-hmm. And what about the businesses and shops that your family went to in your neighborhood? Do you remember them?
Well, in the neighborhood, the only thing I can remember was that in Northeast, right around the corner from where I was born, was a undertaker. And that was called, can't think of the name, Citizens Undertaking Establishment.
Yes.
Right. Uh-huh. Okay. And Roy Clark ran that. And across the street from Roy Clark was a building there. I don't remember now what was in it. But the trolley car would come down up Commonwealth Avenue and make a right turn on Commonwealth Avenue going down toward the gas house,
mm-hmm.
and would end up down there,
uh-huh.
at the end of the line.
Uh-huh.
And then the motorman would get out. He would take the trolley down from, you know what a trolley car was? You got an electrical wire here, you know, that runs up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come down, it's in one position. And when you get to the end of the line, you take that down and put it up down here to use to go back. I don't know why that was, why they did, why they used the same one, but they didn't. And he would have to get out and go back there and hook the thing up to the electrical line up here. And there was a Jamison store. You ever hear of a Jamison?
Mm-mm.
Well, very similar to a Kroger store.
Oh.
And that was right there. That was between the undertaker and our house. And then there was, just come down the street, there was a drugstore that was operated, brand new building, that was operated by two people that I knew, the children. And
was that Brooks?
No.
Another one.
Brooks was the Northwest.
Uh-huh.
This was Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called a modern pharmacy. And it was operated by Sam Reed, and who was a businessman, and a Beverly Adams. And upstairs over the drugstore, they had a Dr. Yancey and a Dr. Hilton, I think. Yancey was a medical doctor, and Hilton was a dentist. He's on the business and things. And there was a tailor called Hatsuma. He was from overseas or somewhere, one of those places, but he had a big family, and he was a mean man, too, because he, his children were all afraid of him, because he would, if they say something to him he didn't like or whatever, he'd throw coat hangers and things at him, hit him in the head or whatever. But he did a good job in tailoring clothes. Then right down the corner from him was a place called W.D. Powell, a grocery store. And there was a hotel down there, too, called Clark Hotel. And there was a shoe shop down there. Clark Hotel, they only catered to white people who was in that neighborhood. And then there was a shoe shop over there that catered to anybody. And those are the only ones that I can remember in Northeast now. And of course, you come on up toward where you are here now, coming up the street, you don't want to know all those people that lived on there, because the principal at the school that I went to when I first started school lived in that block right below here. Mm-hmm. And her name was Sarah Brown. Mm-hmm. And I remember when, you know, I just never did think that girls could whip boys, you know, so. The teacher wasn't in the room right then, you know, so we got in a little argument, me and the girl, and said, she don't stand a chance. She grabbed me, boom! I was on the floor. I said, I can't believe this. I got back up and grabbed the girl, boom! On the floor again. That taught me a lesson. I said, now, girls can fight too, see. But anyway, he carried me to the office. I don't remember what I did, but Miss Brown, the principal, she had a strap about that wide, about that thick. All right, George, stick your hand out there. Try to move my hand back like this, you know. Put that hand out there. Pow! Pow! But you know, whatever I did, I don't remember what it was, but I know I never did it again. But I never wanted my hand held out like this for a strap to be hitting like she did my hand. But you know, when you have to discipline children, you have to do things to them that they won't never forget, because you don't want to do the same thing that they did to get whipped this time for. And I learned that a long time ago.
How old were you when your father built the house on Patton?
I don't know. I'm saying I was quite young because I was still at home. Or maybe 10, 12 years old.
Uh-huh. So you all moved up to Patton from 4th Street. Let's see. That was before Northeast was torn down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, but, and then, what do you remember about urban renewal in that first wave of urban renewal in Northeast?
Well, the only thing I can remember about it was, I remember I went to Gregory School, which was down on, I think it was Gilmer Avenue Northeast. No, it wasn't Gilmer Avenue Northeast. I forget the name of the street. 9th Avenue, I think they called it. And it was a pretty good size school. And they had different rooms in it. And Sarah Brown, just like I said, was the principal down there. And we were trying to get it together, you know. There was another school down there called Gilmer School, mm-hmm. which is on Gilmer Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember ever going to Gilmer. But I remember going to Harrison, which is up on Harrison Avenue, mm-hmm. where the school is still there, but it's not a school anymore.
You know? Right.
That's where Harrison Museum is, mm-hmm. up there in that building. Mm-hmm. I went to that school, and from there I went to Addison. And I remember Sarah Brown was a principal down at Gregory School. I don't remember now who was the principal at Gilman, because I didn't go there. The next principal, I don't remember who was the principal at Harrison, but the next one I remember was a doctor, Mr. Parker. I don't know his first name. He was the principal at Addison at that time. But when they had, everybody had to leave from down there, they had, oh, it was a heck of a mess, because I remember we had to, I know Daddy didn't want to give up this house because, you know, it wasn't that old.
See, built it.
He hadn't built it, see? And, but we all had to leave. And,
Do you remember seeing houses torn down as a child?
Yeah. And you see, my mom, I don't remember whether Daddy was still living when we had to move. Now, I don't think that. I think Daddy was dead by then. I think my mama came up and picked out this house where I'm living in now, see. But I'm glad she picked out that house, because it was done a whole lot worse, because the neighborhood, well, right across the street from me is a church parking lot, which I have no problem with at all. And there's only three houses on the block that I live in, and they try to keep their places up, you know, and because I try to keep my place up. As a matter of fact, the guys just finished putting a new fence up around my house today. It's really hard. A little late getting down here, because it only took them 2 days to come down. But they had to take down the whole fence that I had and replace it with a new fence. And they did an excellent job on it. And but I don't remember now some of the houses that were torn down. But it looked like me, once I left from down there and moved to Northwest, I never went back down there to speak of, because there was nothing down there. See, because once we left from down there, they started working on the Civic Center and where the Ford Motor Company is now, and Sheets, down that area, right behind St. Andrew's School. I belong to an organization now that we got money from this, from the government. I don't know how they did this thing, but it was called what's the name of that organization? I forget now. I'll think about it in a few minutes. And we got money to buy that property back there behind, you know where the Holiday Inn is down in there on Gainsborough?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All of that property down there belonged to the organization I belong to.
Is it Southwest Virginia
That's
Community
it.
Development Fund?
That's exactly what it was. Exactly what it was. And we had them, they came in and developed all of that land down in there, because you've got stamp and seal, you got another place down there that sells lawn and garden stuff, you know, mm-hmm. and I don't know what these other places have down there. And then we also had a place, a corrugated box factory on Cleveland Avenue. And these were the good days, you know, and
mm-hmm.
we had a furniture factory over in Craig County, and some other little businesses, you know. But since that time, you know, we sold the property, and we don't have any income from it now anymore,
mm-hmm.
because they bought the property, and whatever we did with the rest of the money, you had to try another business over here, and the business didn't fail. You know, we didn't know that much about operating a business to start with.
Mm-hmm.
See. But I've been in that organization. I'm still on the board down there, and I've been on that board for 25 years, I guess.
Wow.
And they're still over in the Lawson building. You know where it is?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know where it is, then, because you mentioned it. Stan Hale?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you remember coming to this library in your youth?
Not really.
Do you remember Mrs. Lee, Mrs. Virginia?
Sure, I remember Mrs. Lee, sure. But you see, the old YMCA over here on Wells Avenue, we got off of that. Uh-huh. It was right across the street over there. It was about Dr. Paxton, right up the street, was the house that we went to for the lab. I mean, for the Y. Mm-hmm. You can imagine the size of a backyard that we had to play baseball in. Wow. In a neighborhood like this. And you get out there with the balls and bats, you know, and you get a pretty good sized fence around them to keep from knocking the ball out of it. And then we had played dart ball inside. You know what a dart ball thing is? A no. Big diamond shaped thing with, you know, with all the different bases on there, and you throw darts up there and play.
Oh, okay.
Dart ball, you know. And then subsequently they moved over onto right across the street over here was the Y. The new Y.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a much nicer place.
What do you remember about Henry Street and the Dumas Hotel? And did you ever go there?
Mm-hmm.
And the Ebony Club and all the businesses and entertainment? Did you go to any performances?
Not really. I remember when they had functions and things going on over there. I can't remember one that I went to, but I was always a friend of the Barlows that owned the hotel,
mm-hmm.
and his children, and we would go over there to different things and meals or whatever. And I don't remember when all of these biggies were coming over, big entertainers.
Yeah.
I don't remember them going to any of their functions at all. But I remember going to the movies because you pay 10 cents to go in. And I remember, I always liked to sit on the front seat, front row. So, you know, I had to be pretty young at that time,
Well, we're running out of time. I just wanted to ask you one more question. Mm-hmm. How has Gainsborough changed over the years?
Well, Gainsborough's changed a lot for the best because you take all the old homes that were over here on Wells Avenue. They're all gone because First Baptist Church is over there now, and the Educational Center is over there. And there has to be some more work done over here because I think that the Clayton place, something needs to be done about that. You know, the clinic and the property where the old home place used to be. Well, Stan Hale's office is down there, which is okay. But the other changes have been made, just like this place behind us here, Lady of the Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we have some people that did not want them to do anything to Gainsborough. Mm-hmm. And I wrote an article in the paper, I remember that, and I told them that I thought it would be a good idea to do something about it because it was just all run-down buildings over there. The old YMCA and all of that was over there. And all that stuff needed to be out of there because a lot of empty buildings and whatever. But look at it now. You'd never know it was there. See, but you got people like Helen, I'm not going to call their names, I'm going to say. These two sisters, you know, and another group of two sisters, they were always negative about everything. They looked like they didn't want to see any progress made. It's just what they wanted. They figured that they knew everything about everything. And I just wrote an article to the Tribune here just a few weeks back. And I told them that what I thought about when they had an article in the Tribune about Henry Street. Then I wrote an article about how I felt about it. I told them that I felt that the Social Security office would be an asset to Henry Street. I said, these people have been over here, it's been vacant for 50 years. If they want to do something about it, why did they wait this long? 50 years, nobody's even driven a nail on a 2x4. But now they don't put this building over here. Well, what are you going to do with the space? They can't afford to put anything up there, so what are they going to do about it? And I told them in the paper, I said, let the city manager have her way. And I said, let whatever she can do to have them put the Social Security building up there, let them do it. And I was very adamant about that because I just felt that it was necessary. I'd like to see him put a nice restaurant on the first floor. You know, it could be for the employees, the people in the area, or whatever. And whatever they wanted to do upstairs, or whatever it took for the Social Security building, they'd fill up the rest of it. And I put it out on the paper, just like Lewis Perry was saying a few minutes ago before we left. George, that article that you put in the papers, I meant to call you and tell you what a wonderful article I thought it was. I just hadn't got around to it. But, now.
Well, thank you so much.
You threw at me?
Yeah, this is great.